About the penalty for sleeping, the penalty for enforcing or seeking to secure your civil rights. For the next 2 hours, we're going to be considering lots of stuff around topics for poor people, topics outside. This is Bathroom Spears Broadsides, January 28th edition. Stay tuned. Bathrob Spear, Robert Norris, and this is Bathrob Spear's Broadsides here. A two-hour show every Thursday from 6 to 8, and every Sunday from 11 in the morning to 1:30 in the afternoon. Sometimes we get an even longer period of time. And, boy, I hope you stay with us. You can call us at 427-3772. You can call the voicemail in case you're shy and want to talk to the station but don't want to talk on air at 427-4523. You can email us at frsc@cruzio.com, and you can snail mail us at P.O. Box 7507 Santa Cruz 95061. A lot of numbers to call, and you can also reach me off air as my Huff persona, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at appropriately enough, 423-HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, 4833-423-4833. Well, I just came rushing in from a meeting of the task force to examine the camping ordinance. Three council members, actually only two tonight, on the second floor of the library, meeting for an hour, actually an hour and a half this time, from 4 to 5:30. Around the issue of the ordinance that makes it illegal for homeless people to sleep outside after 11 o'clock until 8:30 in the morning. And it also makes it illegal for them to cover up, and also makes it illegal for them to set up a campsite And there's been a lot of concern about this law because Santa Cruz has 500 to 1,500 homeless people, and less than 220 of which have any legal shelter, even theoretically, in Santa Cruz. Let's say on the floor of the armory or the floor of a church. Those are the legal places to go for emergency shelter, the only places that are available. That's where, if you fall asleep, even if you're doing nothing criminal, even if you're taking up no space that would block anybody else, even if you're not creating a mess or anything of that sort, that's criminal. That's a $162 ticket, twice in 48 hours means 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. And for many of us, that's not only absurd and humorous, but it's also cruel and vicious. And it doesn't belong in a civilized community. And we are trying to remove those provisions and to be one of the cities that has eliminated the sleeping ban sections of the camping ban. Actually, the entire camping ban needs a thorough revamping because in winter and in summer, when it rains, it pours. And when it pours, you need a place to be out of the rain. You need a place to be out of the cold. You need to have the right to shelter yourself if you're in a society that has decided the priorities are not going to be shelter for its people, but rather, profits for the rich, then people should have the right still to shelter themselves. And that's, of course, becoming increasingly difficult as gentrification takes over city after city. If it's not the environmentalists in the program up telling you you can't set up a tent, it's the bigots downtown or in the neighborhood saying you can't sleep in a corner somewhere else. And then it's the Parks and Rec kind of seeking you out down in the riverbeds, which have been made illegal. So the concern we have is to change Municipal Code 6.36. We elected three new council members to do so, Fitzmaurice, Cronin, and Sugar. And hopefully in aid of that objective, though many of us have been skeptical about where it's all going, Mayor Byers on December 8th established a task force with the consent of the four members of the City Council, total of four letters, including Catherine Byers, three opposing, Hernandez, Matthews, and what is the name of that? Rapkin, yes. Michael Rapkin. They opposed that, and the task force has been going forward, theoretically meeting at least twice a week in an hour session, and then more frequently in terms of the so-called focus groups, where they go out to particular groups and say, what do you think of the camping ordinance? So, I've been rather negative about the group because I felt they aren't asking the right questions. They aren't bringing homeless people to deal with the bigotry in the neighborhoods. They aren't considering anything specific in terms of a real change in the camping law, or the sleeping sections of the camping law. And I presented these concerns. I've been concerned that there isn't an equal playing field because homeless people have to continue to be arrested and at least harassed and sometimes ticketed for sleeping at night. And so they have to be afraid. And they cannot come to these meetings because police officers are there and they have to take the risk of a warrant if they have tickets out. They can't, in essence, be a really equal part of this dialogue. And I requested the City Council members temporarily suspend the sleeping and blanket sections of the camping ban simply for the purpose of a democratic debate. But that apparently was considered to be too radical, and Byers has declared she will consider no such proposals, she will put no other items on the agenda, and that upset me mightily, plus the fact that she canceled the last three task force meetings before this one, cut us off at oral communications at City Council, refused to give us an opportunity to apply to the police when they had their focus group, essentially gave 1 hour to the homeless focus group, and then gave 8 hours to merchants and neighborhood right-wing focus groups that were self-selected bigots, many of them, I have to say it, good people in other respects perhaps, but certainly bigots on this homeless issue. David Silva at the current meeting, he's the chair of the committee to repeal the sleeping ban, the initiative that came out last year, and almost made it to the ballot, but fell short. He pointed out that there were numerous agreements reached between people in all these groups, that they agreed that they were not going to be against the homeless. They agreed that they didn't want it in their backyard, but they wanted to do something. There was a lot of consensus for some kind of a campground somewhere. He, I think, put too positive a face on it for my taste. He was trying to encourage the task force not to give up, not to drop the whole thing out. He thinks that the task force needs to be publicly kind of reassured that somehow, somewhere, eventually they'll do the right thing. And who knows? You know, I actually had the most positive experience I've yet had at one of these task force meetings. in this meeting. The chair, Catherine Byers, the mayor, did not really attempt to cut people off. She allowed people to speak. And while it is true, this frustrated her and some, the other member, Chris Crane. Keith Shirley was not in evidence there. He wasn't there. Apparently he forgot about it or something, or he had some conflict. There was a lot of positive things said. Attorney Keith Wells was there talking about the Ahern decision, which is a decision coming out of Southern California, which I'm actually going to read to you in its entirety shortly. And it talks about the right to use the necessity defense if you're brought up for a ticket for sleeping or even for camping. You have the right to the necessity defense, which means you can try to show that you had to violate the law to prevent a greater evil. We're going to talk about that, and I'm going to give you some of that conversation. And I think I'm also going to play through some selections from the task force meeting. We're going to get into that shortly. If you want to be a part of this discussion, if you have any questions that have come up about anything I've said, or you have any experiences of your own to relate around issues of police harassment or discrimination against the poor, or anything that I'm talking about seems somehow linked to what I'm saying, give me a call here at the Free Radio Santa Cruz phone line. It's 427-3772, 427-FRSC. This is 96.3 FM, Free Radio. Your Free Radio, your City Council-endorsed Free Radio station. I have to take off my hat to at least six members of the City Council. Cynthia Matthews apparently was still pouting in the corner because per Citizens Police Review Board nominee Bill Do Nothing Christie was rejected and she refused to give a second nominee. That's actually another exciting and important thing that's happened this week. Another reason for praising the City Council. The City Council actually, and Catherine Byers led the charge here, or certainly was a part of the charge, said no way Jose to Cynthia Matthews' attempt to put Mary Beth Campbell's appointee back on the board. He'd been the chair during the time the Citizens Police Review Board whitewashed the Happy John Dine case, and I don't think it was for that reason that Byers, Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar said no thanks. Rather, it was because they wanted the Citizens Police Review Board to take a new direction and to start standing up to the police department in numerous ways. And Catherine actually said that, and I have a very good tape of that, unfortunately. Won't be able to get that to you until later in the show. We're also hoping to have a report from the better backer Becky Johnson, video journalist, sometime Citizens Committee of the Homeless Board member. Of course, she was ousted by Byers and Karen Gillette, kind of working in concert. And now, kind of a rigorous participant in the whole process of examining the sleeping ban, fighting it. She's writing a new article on the sleeping ban for next month's issue of Street Spirit, the homeless newspaper published in San Francisco and available down on Pacific Avenue, particularly in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz. If you're interested, that should be coming out in February. There is also a very good article by a fine writer, a man of discretion, sexy, charming, literate, witty. I, of course, refer to myself. And that can be found on the front page of Street Spirit, the current issue, the January issue, if you want to get a copy of that. It's a buck, and you've got to get it from a homeless person, and they get the money, most of it. I think they get 90 cents off a dollar. The other 10 cents goes to, my gold-plated trust fund and my Tahitian plane fare, which we're hoping eventually give me enough money to get out of town. Well, I think that has been offered at different times, not to Tahiti possibly, but maybe Fresno, who knows. So let's catch a little music, and then let's turn to the task force that met today, the task force to examine the camping ordinance. Stay with us. Everybody said I only did it to annoy, but I was gonna be an angel. And my mother said you learn to be a lady. It's a duty that to make me a mother of a girl. Wait until you're older, you old lady. You'll be glad that you are a girl. Hey, I went out to school, I learned to write and how to read. Some history, geography, and home economy. And typing
because it's not what we feel we should need. To while away the extra hours and take time to breathe. And when we have the nerve to say, well, would you like to be? I said, there's gotta be an engineer. Well, you only have to learn to be a lady. The beauty of the year is for the try to run the world. An engineer could never have a baby. The man could be the true anchor. Forget as easy as a dressing statue. To analyze a Judy heart. Move on first, it's screaming low. Learn to cool and to move. That's what you do to be a lady now. So I become a type of better study on the slide. Working all the day and that's how I could qualify. And every time the boss comes down, he'll pinch me on the side. But I never had an engineer. Oh, yeah, it's you, the job to be a lady. It's the duty of the staff, but it gives the boss a word. The wages that you get are crummy, maybe. And if all you think is she a girl. Yes, I'm a fella, she's not for a woman. I wonder how she got that way. I see no father. He had no choice. He get no voice. Just stay warm until you're done. That's how you come to be a lady today. When Julie came along, we set up the conjugation. We were busy every night with all the recreation. Spent the days at work so we could get an education. Now he's an engineer. But he says, I'm only the beauty of my darling, the lucky of my life. Remember you, the best of all, baby. Remember me, you're my wife. As soon as you got a job, then I'll be back again. Happy as my tulip, baby, you were so a man. The morning that the twins were born, these two were put to them. If your mother was an engineer, now you owe it to the kids to be a lady. Lazy as a dish, right, faithful as a child. Say it home, you got to mind that baby. Remember you're a mother now. I ask you what price for a woman. You can buy a barrel without gold. To love and obey without a be paid. To get a cook and a nurse for better or worse. But don't need a purse when a lady is sold. And now the times are harder and each day got this back. I went down to U.S. too and they were glad to have me back. I met those cracks for the first, the way to call me back. At a first class engineer. And the boss is at the bank, you are the lady. You only got the job cause I can't afford a man. You do a heap of crap, but try out, baby. You just to cheat the poor old hand. Listen to my mother and I join the type and fool. I listen to my darling and I'm putting you to school. But if I listen to the boss, I'm just a bloody fool. And I'm a paid engineer. I've been a sucker ever since I was a baby. As a daughter and a wife, as a mother and a dear. I'll fight them as a woman, not a lady. I'll fight them as an engineer.
That was Kristen Lane singing Petty Seeger's famous song, a somewhat abridged version, I Was Gonna Be an Engineer. Great song. Sometime I'll play the unabridged version, which is even better. Petty Seeger's a wonderful singer, wonderful writer, and Kristen Lane does her proud, too. Well, now I'm going to turn to the oral communications section of the task force to examine the camping ordinance that has its meeting today at 4 o'clock in the library. First, a little background. This is a task force, as I mentioned before, that has three council members, Byers, Crone, and Sugar. Today, only Crone and Byers were present. They have essentially not yet addressed any specific proposal, and there was a lot of restlessness and impatience, some of it directed against me at one point, for to get that process underway and to stop simply taking public comment, and I do agree with that. They now say, to kind of give you the end conclusion, the bottom line of the task force, that they intend to meet on Monday, that's February 1st, this coming Monday, at 4 o'clock, again, in the second floor of the library, if you want to come, it's open to the public, and they're going to begin talking about the language for changing the camping ban ordinance And we hope specifically striking or severely restricting the sleeping ban section and striking the blanket ban section and striking the misdemeanor provision, which makes two acts of camping a six-month jail up to $1,000 fine misdemeanor. And we're hoping that that goes out the window, particularly since, as I said before earlier in the show, there's less than, 220 spaces for 550 human people, and come April, there's going to be less than 40 spaces for the same number of people, and the number is probably going to increase as the safety net completely dissolves and the rents continue to climb higher and higher. So that's Monday at 4 o'clock. I was a little disconcerted because the mayor did say that she would not hold a meeting unless all three people were present. I suggested she hold a meeting and allow oral communication. I was kind of shouted down by a couple of homeless people, or other advocates, I should say. It wasn't really shouted down. There were remarks made that you know, we've had enough oral communication, we need to do action. But of course, if they cancel their meeting, there won't be any action anyway. And really, we actually had quite a productive meeting, even without an examination of the language of the camping ordinance, which I think needs to be done. And I'm really glad the council is moving ahead into that section. The real question mark is, what are they thinking? How are they feeling about it? What do they want to do? And I guess, perhaps, as affords what they consider to be proper public process, they are not seeing what their views are. Now, this has alarmed me in the past, because I've been afraid that Catherine is not committed to any fundamental changes in this law, and has spent so much time dealing with neighbors and merchants and reassured them that she was going to come back to them again and talk to them some more without being an advocate for sleeping being a human right, that I feared she was doing this as some kind of a show, or we're making a good effort, as for example they did 6 months worth back in 1995-96 when they were closing the Coral Street Open Air Shelter and supposedly looking for another place to place the campground. They didn't find another place. Actually, they found plenty of other places, but there was always something wrong with that particular place. This is Celia Scott and Catherine Byers, who in other respects are considered heroes in this community. Well, in terms of the effort with respect to homeless people, they are as far from heroes as you can be. Well, I suppose Rotkin is further. But they certainly are not heroes around this issue. And I was afraid that Byers was adopting another one of these wild goose chases that was going to lead nowhere, but she could turn to all her constituents and say, oh, look, I tried, you see. Now, that's the cynical view, and I really want to be proved wrong. And who knows? As I said, I came out of the meeting today with the feeling that maybe I will be proved wrong here. And wouldn't that be wonderful? That would be really exactly what I want to happen. Prove me wrong. I'm going to play for you some of the oral communication. And maybe it was simply that they let people do a lot of talking. Maybe it was we had eloquent voices like Sherry Connable, Kate Wells, Emily of Emily's Bakery came and really supported changing the law and ending the sleeping ban. I hope I'm not misquoting her, but I really felt she was very positive in that regard. The only critic in the audience didn't say much. She was Peter Eberle, the Downtown Association's executive director. And the two police officers there, the chief of police, Steve Belcher, and his liaison, Butchie Baker, community service officer, or community affairs officer, I'm not sure. I was going to talk about questioning why Baker is on this group at all, because as far as I'm concerned, he's still under a cloud from charges leveled against him by homeless women and other women back in the early 90s, although the grand jury has found him fit for duty, and the Internal Affairs Department of the Police Department, and I guess the State Attorney General's Office, also said he's got a clean bill of health. They essentially said 10 women lied or didn't have enough evidence or something, and Baker got declared Man of the Year and promoted to sergeant soon after. But stories are still circulating about problems that Baker has. Once an individual I'm thinking of clears up a case and gives me permission, I will go into that case in detail on the air. And it's not that I dislike Baker as a person. I don't really know him as a person, but having police officers who harassed homeless people in 1990 and have given no real indication that they've changed, posing as pals of the homeless and sources of useful information for changing the law to help homeless people, I think, is a major imposture. I'm going to read for you, too, a speech that I gave to the... I'm sorry, that I didn't give to City Council, because Catherine Byers decided on Tuesday night, even though we'd waited 2 hours beyond the normal time oral communication would have started, 7 o'clock, we were about there 9:10, when only Bernard Klitzner, the Peace and Freedom Party, holding his son in his arms, as he'd been doing for the last 2 hours, trying to hold him, trying to take care of him, child-caring him, throughout this kind of long City Council meeting that, where other business had spilled over, Byers refused to give us 6 minutes to speak, 3 minutes each, as she'd given every other speaker. That wouldn't have been so bad. We were, you know, there were 30 minutes of time for oral communication had probably elapsed. But we had been held there for 2 hours and 10 minutes to reach that point, and it would have been the decent thing to do, the fair thing to do, the reasonable thing to do to give us our time. And I think, I really thought at the time, and I told her this afterward in the communication by phone, that I felt she was being discriminatory, particularly since she'd canceled the last 3 task force meetings. She'd refused to allow anything on the agenda as an item that would help homeless people avoid warrants and avoid sleeping tickets and be able to attend these task force meetings and deal with the public dialogue. She wouldn't allow any of that stuff. She wouldn't allow any discussion of increased shelter. It really concerned me. The process seemed to be skewed in the other direction, and I actually brought this point up. You're going to probably hear me talking about it at the task force meeting. We're going to hear a tape part of that. I am really ill-prepared for the show. I have to be honest with you, all you listeners out there listening to 96.3. This is, of course, Bathrop's peer Robert Norris's Broadsides, and I'm Mr. Norris himself. I'm ill-prepared because I spent the last 2 hours kind of running around doing things around this task force, and so I apologize if this is sort of a makeshift show, but I think you'll find some of this interesting nonetheless. And what we're going to do, if I get this properly, we're going to begin listening to oral communications at the task force. And I'm going to break in and give you the speech that I was unable to give. And we'll then go from there, and I'll be able to, by that time, have caught up a bit. We're also hoping to get a report from the Homeless Services Center. That's the Karen Gillette Center that runs the Community House Project and the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program and the Homeless Services, Homeless Community Resource Center, all 3 programs. And the board meeting they have is tonight. For those of you who are interested, it's out at Coral Street, in case you want to wander on out there and hear what Karen Gillette is up to. I've been quite critical of Karen in many respects in terms of civil rights for and fair access to political discussion, not providing, you know, pickups for some people who wanted to go down and be a part of public events. But I've also spoken positively about her eloquence, indeed. She's knowledgeable and eloquent in many respects, and should not be dismissed as a person of some experience around bringing out the concerns and needs of at least some of the homeless community. Anyway, that's happening right now, and we're hoping to get a report from the Homeless Services Center Board of Directors from exile board member or board member in exile, Becky Johnson. But let's hear now from the task force. This was recorded about an hour and a half ago.
Yeah, thank you. Sure. In order for me, you know, to have more security,
about
what your task force is doing, I would like to ask you to do 4 things, you know, starting tomorrow. One would be, please put 1 or 2 homeless people on your board. That would be my first request.
Board, you mean
Public
Board?
Yes, this task force right here, this subcommittee.
Yes.
You have 2 police officers on it now, that's my understanding, and you could at least put 1 homeless person on it. Okay, the next one would be, I would like to ask you to have 1 more meeting with homeless people, okay? And because you've had 2 big meetings with business people, But you've only had one meeting with homeless people, and this was a task force that you didn't even show up for, Katya, on the homeless meeting. Okay? And then I would like to ask you to at least have one task force meeting or a focus group where people could talk more than 2 minutes. Because 2 minutes really doesn't, for a lot of us, really doesn't do it. Okay? And then finally, you know, I'd like to ask you, if you decide to hold this homeless meeting, could you not have the police there so that so homeless people could come out and really talk about their problems and feel okay? Because we heard from other homeless people that they didn't come to that first one, you know, or they didn't really talk their mind because they do feel intimidated. So those are my four requests.
I got the task force to see the homeless, another meeting with the homeless. I'm sorry, what was the third one?
That we could have more, that people could talk more than 2 minutes.
Oh, longer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Kathy.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Anyone else under public comment on it?
I don't believe, Bernard, that the police are part of the task force. They come to these meetings just like you do. I mean, to participate and
I'll answer.
Yeah. So there's any membership involved. This is a task force comprised of 3 city council members. You know, we're empowered by the city council. So this is what we're going to do, and there's a vote, and there's a resolution, we're trying to proceed with that business.
Yes. The task force was by the city council appointing 3 people and 3 people only. We have staff here, and there's certainly most of the time we do have someone here and not here, but that's just on their part. They're not part of the task force. He's responding. I know. If the task force does continue, is there a possibility of putting homeless on it?
Yes, or even on staff. Even if I have to amend my thing.
But just to be clear, it is only a staff task force, 3 people.
Yes.
So staff can come and go. So.
That's Catherine Byers, the mayor, responding to a request from Bernard Klitzner, the Peace and Freedom Party, that homeless people be included on an equal footing as staff with police officers, which of course they haven't been. And since they aren't going to be holding any more focus meetings, except for one, actually there will be a focus meeting tomorrow, I forgot to mention this, that is to say a meeting with a particular group, and the public is also invited to attend to listen rather than to speak. That will be at the Homeless Services Center, their second meeting with the homeless community from 2:30 to 3:30 tomorrow, Friday afternoon, for all you council and homeless watchers or people concerned about the sleeping ban. That's out at 115 Coral Street at the Homeless Services Center, the Homeless Community Resource Center out there. It's from 2:30 to 3:30. Byers, Kroon, and Sugar will presumably be out there giving the homeless their second opportunity to speak. They actually asked for an hour and a half or 2 hours, what I had hoped would be happening, but apparently Karen Gillette would only allow, or said that only an hour could be facilitated. And we don't know if the police are going to be present or not. People have suggested, and Chris Cronin even brought up, that certain homeless people have come to him and said they felt uncomfortable having police there. And so hopefully they'll have an opportunity to speak without police being present. That's going to be happening tomorrow at 2:30. And then again on Monday there will be a meeting of the task force in the library on the second floor at 4 o'clock. Continuing with this task force meeting from today. And that was Peter Eberle, the Downtown Association's Executive Director, asking that not only should there be a task force where the police are excluded in meeting with the homeless, but there should be a task force meeting, a focus group with the residents, or possibly, I think, with the merchants, from which perhaps homeless people or advocates are excluded. That's a little different. He's asking that the public be excluded. I mean, I think that that's maybe seeking another private meeting, which I don't consider to be appropriate, but I didn't bring it up at that time. I think afterward, Catherine and Chris seemed to be deciding they weren't going to have any more focus meetings except for this last one with the homeless, that they wanted to go directly into discussing ordinance language, which I think is a very positive thing. We have to know whether these people are going to shit or get off the pot, and we need to know that in order to decide what to do next to make sure that we get some real responses from City Hall and some real changes. And if they don't want to give them to us, then we'll have to find some other way to get them. And if they do want to give them to us, then the sooner the better.
Well, I hope my absence at the last few meetings doesn't have given you a picture that I'm not still as vehement as always. I have been ill, and to punish a human being for the involuntary act of eye closure due to lack of sleep is just as ludicrous as slapping your child for throwing up when they're sick. Even more ludicrous. It's a bodily function, sleep. To talk about all this intimidation, you know, it's quite clear to me that at least the intimidation of the homeless activists is opening out in the front. I suspect that there, in fact, it's quite apparent that there's quite a bit of intimidation going on behind the scenes.
What's being referred to here by Attorney Kate Wells is complaints made by several neighborhood residents from the downtown neighbors at the city council meeting on Tuesday evening, and maybe we'll be able to hear that later, that they had folks with them at the large forum on Monday night, the night before the city council meeting, where at Loudon Nelson 3 hours or 2.5 hours of testimony was taken from the public around the camping ban ordinance. And a number of the older folks felt uncomfortable because of the strong language, perhaps, or some catcalls that happened from the audience, or one person said he felt that his wife had been called a Nazi. And that, in essence, intimidated neighbors and residents from speaking to the city council directly. It should be said that they are far from intimidated from sending endless letters full of I don't want to call them, irrelevant kind of hate material about linking homeless people with drugs, litter, poo-poo, and so forth, without any specific evidence or backing. Although, I must also say that at our meeting today, we had Feed the People worker Tirith was claiming that many homeless people are very irresponsible in their campsite activity, and she feels, you know, that really needs to be improved, and was rather cynical and skeptical about the homeless community's cleanliness generally. And I think that her voice certainly is more, I would give it more weight than I would to the downtown neighbors. Anyway, the issue of intimidation, Kate Wells is talking about, you know, well, it's all a little difficult to speak at a mic if you've never done so before. You know, neighbors think, well, if I speak, you know, I'm in the neighborhood, they're going to, you know, who knows who's going to come after me. But I guess the question is, to me, that's a form of unjustified apprehension. And, you know, I guess apprehensions are real things, whether they're based on justified or unjustified, and you have to consider them if you want people to be involved in the debate. And indeed, I wrote a letter to the Sentinel recently, which I'm hoping will be published as an op-ed piece this Sunday, though I don't know that it will because I got it in a bit late yesterday, in which I encourage people to remember that we do want to get everybody to the conference table. But that doesn't mean we suborn bigotry. That doesn't mean if somebody proposes a fascist solution that it isn't inappropriate to say that's a fascist solution. I mean, you know, I think that to expect that everybody be very well-behaved and mismanners in these situations when, you know, many people are sleep-deprived, people are in fear of police around basic civil rights questions where they shouldn't have to be in fear of police, is completely unrealistic and shows the distance from reality that a lot of these neighbors are living in. I mean, they live in their comfortable homes, and they're gonna damn well continue living in their comfortable homes, even if it means continuing to criminalize a whole bunch of people, or at least that's what some of these neighbors are saying. And I don't think that really is the voice of all the people there. I think that some people want compromises. They have real concerns. What do I do if someone's camped across the street and I'm getting uncomfortable with them. I don't know what to say to them. If there isn't a camping ordinance, is there any way I can talk to them without having them come and target my rose bed and piss in my back door and drop shit in my garden, that sort of thing? I mean, I don't know these people. They're hairy. They're, you know, counterculture. They have strange clothes and so forth. And they have bongo drums late at night. How do I? In other words, I think that there are legitimate, specific concerns that should be brought up and addressed. And I have no problem with neighbors doing that. It's the general, oh, these dirty, dirty homeless campers, you know, keep the whole camping ordinance citywide, or maybe set up a campground for them somewhere, but, you know, keep the camping ordinance completely, even in industrial areas where there are no residences there, because everybody will come to town and camp in my neighborhood. I mean, it's an irrational and a cruel response, and an unthinking one, and I don't really have too much sympathy for it, particularly when I read it repeatedly like a form letter coming out of the city council's letter file, which, by the way, is thick with letters supporting the camping ordinance. So all you folks out there, if you oppose the sleeping ban, you better get off the stick and start writing, like, right now. You know, you really should. It's a very simple thing to do. You drop a letter to the Sentinel under 200 words, and you send a copy to the city council and say, City Council, end the sleeping ban, here's why, and give your own personal experiences or thoughts or arguments, and tell them, because otherwise they have this sheaf full of hate mail that's masquerading as public testimony, and they're going to go with it. Not all of it, of course, is hate mail, but some of it is, and some of it sounds like it's being churned out by a few folks at the center of these neighborhood organizations. I suppose I shouldn't regard that as extremely sinister, because I'm trying to churn out some of the other stuff. But I guess you make a choice here, and you decide, where's the human rights issue, which side do you come down on, and which side is the side to be on. I've made that choice. And if you made that choice, write the city council a letter. And if you have any questions about what to say or how to do it, give me a call at 423-HUFF. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. It's a number you can catch when I'm off the air. 423-4833. I think it's really important to get these letters out. And give me a call if you need any help with that. Even if you just need help being coaxed into doing it, call me up and I'll coax you. I'll tell you how to do it. I might even hold the pen for you if you're a good person. So, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and we are listening when we can and when I allow you to, and stop talking. The task force, what we thought was the last task force meeting, but actually is actually the last task force meeting before the task force turns to the very important subject of examining the wording of the camping ordinance, which is going to start on Monday at 4 o'clock on the second floor of the library. So let's hear more of this task force meeting. We're listening now to attorney Kate Wells.
And like I said, at least the homeless activists are very upfront in their intimidation, if you want to call it intimidation. You're going to change this law because this law is wrong. It is morally wrong. And if you're not going to change this law because it is morally wrong and repugnant, you're going to change this law because I am going to make it. I vow that as a part of my duty, as I see it, to uphold my own principles, I will donate all of the time possible to make this law impossible to enforce and to make it as costly as possible to the city. I find that we're talking about, I know this is on the agenda, I'm the one that brought the ICORN decision to Tony Condotti's recognition. Someone else brought it to my attention. In fact, someone in the district attorney's office called me Monday morning about it. You want to talk about a necessity defense. That's my defense right now. I think it is a necessity defense that I do everything I in my absolute power to get rid of this absolutely inhumane, immoral, unconscionable law that actually punishes a person for a natural bodily function. And for no other reason than a natural bodily function. The ICORN decision is an arrow in my quiver. I can make it very difficult to prosecute these cases with this ICORN decision. And believe me, I will. I will do that. It's a moral imperative to me. I understand that at one of the meetings that I missed, that there was quite a bit of talk about the trespass laws being impossible to enforce. I wasn't there, and if I had been, I would have laughed long and hard. And I will bring my string of clients who have been, in fact, arrested and prosecuted for trespass. One of my clients, 6 times arrested for trespass, prosecuted to the hilt. That is absolutely not true, that the trespass laws are not functioning and a very good way for alternative for law enforcement to deal with any kind of trespass. So I want that to be known. If the trespass laws are no good, I got a lot of clients who are really wondering, who spent time in jail behind trespass laws. So.
I would say also about the trespassing law, leaving sections, and the way the camping ordinance is designed, you know, causes trespassing. So we are the ones that are guilty of the trespassing, and reparations need to be made. I was so jubilant about the ICOR decision Monday. Perhaps I lost a little bit of my grace and went for the bait when that man told his foul lie. Defiling democracy and misrepresenting, you know, his neighborhood association. Maybe I lost a little grace.
What are you talking about?
Yeah,
I got it.
Yeah. So maybe I lost a little grace because I was jubilant about the ICORN decision. Let's just call it that. And I think I made some very good points. Until this week, it seems to me we have been doing an incredible job in building community consensus. I was so critical of Catherine for throwing the entire camping ordinance on the table because I thought things should be done in a certain order, and I also thought that, that focus groups, you should have the clarifying questions first or else it just becomes venting. Well, this venting has been a very healthy thing. I can think of at least 5 major common grounds that the neighborhoods, the business, and the homeless activists and the homeless all agree on that we've discovered, really. We've been somewhat surprised how much common ground we have. To now, because we have a little bump in the road, you know, there's always going to be saboteurs of democracy. Because we had a little bump in the road, I don't think we should all start getting real defensive, and those who have been abused so long by this law and those who represent those who have been abused by wrong for that law, extend this process any longer. I think we have a very good sense of what the community believes. You know, the community does not want, no neighborhood wants to be known as anti-homeless. They've all told us that. And they all feel NIMBY, not in my backyard, but they all agree that they should share some part of the burden. That's an incredible thing for us to have discovered. So I think we should go on from there, and we should start doing what this task force is supposed to be doing. Talking about this ordinance, and talking about it line by line, section by section. When are we going to get to work, or do we have to have a drafting committee? You know? And I'm sorry if I'm sounding a little edgy. I have a toothache. but I'm here. And I think we're doing a fine job, and I think we're going to be able to back this up in. I don't think anybody has to worry about the election 2 years from now. I think we're going to sweep again. Because I see that what we're doing is we're providing hope to a city that has had to be embarrassed by its law for a long, long time. I didn't mean to make a speech.
David, can you take 30 seconds and just run through those 5 things real quick?
Okay, I had some notes here. Let's see if this thing I printed out real fast in my Zoom. Every group has called, 5 things you can comment down?
Yeah.
Yeah. Every group has called for some safe place to sleep for the homeless. Some campground or some safe overnight vehiculars sleeping. Every type of group has called for that. Every neighborhood has said that the homeless should be allowed to sleep, but neither has said that. Not in my backyard, but they're willing to share the burden. That's another common ground of all the neighborhoods. Even Harvey West said they'd like to take a lighter load, but they were willing to take, they recognize some responsibility. Every group, including the Downtown Association, has called for 24-hour bathrooms and sanitation you know, that we discovered that as our first common ground. It was like, you know, a little bit of joy right at the beginning, you know. And one thing I've noticed, that in every group there's been someone or some few people who have expressed a willingness to do some kind of volunteer work or work as a community in nonprofit and, or new kinds of organizations if we can establish things. Now that's a lot for people to offer, and that shows a lot of concern about the injustice of this ordinance out there in the community. I think those are common ground issues, common grounds that we've discovered.
Okay.
And you know what I think the solutions are.
I'd like to make two brief points. One is for my son. Read the letter I was giving to the city for myself personally on this topic, and he scolded me for not making reference to or discharging the quote magnet theory, end quote. So I thought I'd share his view with you here, because I know he's not going to write another letter to the city. His position is, we can't afford to be worried about people traveling through or deliberately coming here when we haven't been able to accommodate our citizens and people who are going here and even the baseline structure phase. And then my own concern is, I think we need to make some long-term planning like we have with the downtown building and be thinking about the future populations that are going to be put at risk. So in the end, we can quite understand that.
I think that could fit into it, and which works. I think that somehow as a community get the energy and the gumption necessary to create something new, because that's what has to happen, and that's hard. It's really hard, and it's scary, and it takes a lot of energy, and the fear of What if we
this
don't
is
do it
Emily
right? This
of Emily's Bakery
is speaking,
one of the few
us.
Liberal merchants on this issue.
I just want to once again remind the task force that
Brindell,
the issue of creating services is separate from the issue of the civil rights issues that we're dealing with, and that while it's absolutely important to increase services, and that may include a campground, or it may include a car park, that kind of action, while necessary, will not serve all people. That however many services you are capable of producing over the next 2 years, I guarantee it that you will not be able to house all the families with children, all of the disabled people whose income is shrinking compared to their rents, all of the people who are addicted to one thing or another, or who are mentally ill and addicted to something or other, or people who simply won't follow the rules that I'm sure you're going to set up around any campground or any car park, because that's the nature of the beast. So if all we get is another program, we're still going to be left with the civil rights issue that is going to haunt you, clearly going to haunt you, no matter how many, if you create another 300 beds, the issue will still be there, the civil rights issue. And this is a nightmare for every city, especially since Miami and now in Orange County, that as long as there are people who can't be served by the existing shelter programs, that there are more people than programs, then you are in a bind when you say you can't sleep, because there isn't a place for that particular person, either because that the programs that have been created were not created for that particular client population, or because they simply choose not to. And those issues are civil rights issues that cannot be dealt with by creating additional services. I don't want to discourage this group from creating additional services. We have no family shelter in this town where a man and a woman and a child or two can go temporarily. There is none since we lost First Step and New Life shifted to addiction because of money. And that's criminal. And our demographics, which we're going to present to you later, are showing that there's an incredible bulge in single female parents coming. Of the 3,500 calls to the shelter hotline Only 900 came from men. The rest came from women who represented 1,200 children asking for rent assistance and shelter. So we're looking at a specific problem that has two aspects, and I know that as we discuss this, we're confusing the two issues, and that the point is that creating additional services is not going to solve the civil rights issue, and that we do have to deal with both, because both are critically important.
That's very hard, but you're the mayor, and that's why you're here.
Yeah, it's something like that, but you'll get a full report as soon as it's done, and it should have been done today, but it's not.
Okay. I do want to go to the second round unless it's something. Okay.
Yeah, my name's David Silver.
No, that was people that called.
Yes, Robert.
Okay, there are some handouts down there which I've kind of shoved at most people, but you might find them interesting. One is a speech to city council about issues around the task force. The other is an op-ed piece for the Sentinel. Here's an article that is in this month's Street Spirit. And then, of course, there's a copy of the ICORN decision, which is what people have been talking about, the necessity defense.
And that's on our agenda.
Which is also on the agenda. I'm going to be the sour turnip as usual, but only to encourage the task force to deal with some of these concerns. I think you should meet with public defenders. I think you should meet with attorneys like Kate in a specifically legal meeting of essentially allies who are concerned with the civil rights issue. If you acknowledge there is really a civil rights issue that has to be dealt with, if you come to that point, then I think you've got to meet with people who are grappling with it every day. I think it would be good to have another public forum to continue the venting process, even as you work on the wording, because I think the community is getting involved. I know Chris has talked to me about how he feels that people have been, even because of their apprehensions, have been drawn out into speaking their minds. That he considers a good thing. I have some questions about that, but I think it's good that people are exchanging views. I think that forums to consider specific issues would be helpful in terms of task force organization. So, for instance, a forum on the Magnet Theory, a forum on impact on social service providers. Is there a negative impact? Does everybody come to town and use social services in Fort Lauderdale and Santa Barbara, 1986, and Eugene, 1988? These are real questions and real concerns. What about the real impact on the neighborhoods? Who's got the stats, the solid stats? How many complaints were filed? How many complaints about litter and garbage in the neighborhood were actually linked to specific campers who were homeless? How many drug deals and drug convictions are actually linked? These, I think, are important stats so we can separate myths, and I think you can get these by taking particular forms. Some of us were disappointed. I was very upset that after the last focus group on the police, Catherine, you had to cancel the meeting for one reason or another. Chris generously stayed for half an hour, but we didn't have a staff person. No recording was made. No minutes were kept. A lot of us felt that it was a sop and it wasn't a real full consideration. Similarly, you've given endless amounts of time, it seems, for those of us watching, to businesses, neighborhoods, beginning with private meetings that were closed to us, and essentially 1 hour to homeless people in a focus group, where many of them, had to hustle away to get to dinner. I mean, and this not only doesn't look good, but I think it doesn't give you the information you need. You need to be out there talking to a lot of these people. I know they've been coming up to you. I know you've been talking to them. I mean, I'm not saying that hasn't happened, but to put more of that into the formal process, I think, is good. And I specifically want an opportunity today on the agenda, if we have time, and even if we don't, I think it's important we do it somewhere along the line, to respond to the kinds of comments made by the police department. You already heard from Kate Wells that their comments on trespass are disputed, to say the least. They made numerous other references. I circulated a flyer about how the county sheriffs are lying about the county camping ordinance, which I think is completely pertinent to our city investigations. Because if the county camping ordinance allows people to sleep, then it changes your situation civil rights-wise and social service-wise. But if it allows people to sleep and the sheriffs are lying about it so that it really doesn't allow people to sleep because they harass people anyway, we have to know about that. By the way, a brief report, after that meeting, the county sheriffs, when contacted the next day, had some gobbledygook, but the day after, they said, you can sleep in the county for the first time in 10 years. I thank the task force for doing that.
Well, I didn't tell you, right?
You did, Chris. I really would appreciate it if, even though, you know, we may disagree, but try to return phone calls from even members of the public like myself, who may not be in the highest esteem by council members, because it's, I think, a professional responsibility. Catherine does so quite suitably, even though we disagree inevitably and a lot, and it's going to go on like that. I think that there is a real educational need. When you bring, go to neighborhood meetings with people, particularly business and neighborhood groups, it's the reason that Bernard suggested homeless people be on the staff is because what I think is really needed here, if you have a commitment to a civil rights perspective, and I hope you do, is that there'll be education on this issue. Not that you be transparent and hear endless bigotry and stuff come thrown at you and you kind of nod and say, oh, well, this is just public process, we're just listening. That doesn't educate the public. What would educate the public if a homeless person presented the specifics of what, of, you know, that's not really true, this is my situation. I mean, it might require taking a lot of flack from neighbors and so forth, but I think it would be helpful and educational. Finally, I really think that after having canceled three meetings of this task force, Bernard and I were really upset that you, after postponing oral communications for 2 hours at City Council, you didn't allow us to speak for 6 minutes. And I mention it not just as a personal thing, but because these were the issues I was going to bring to the public and to the council. You will not permit us to put anything on the agenda. You told me at the beginning of this meeting, nothing will be permitted to be added. There'll be no additional protection for homeless people for the next month. So they have to go scrounging for their sleeping places. They cannot be safe from warrants, so they can't come to these meetings where the police officers are here, or they have to be afraid of that in a real way. Unlike being afraid of being turned aside with a nasty word by someone from the neighborhood, they have to worry about a jail sentence for being here. This is because this council made a deliberate choice not to suspend the camping ban or the sleeping sections of the camping ban during the pendency of these hearings. I again request that you consider doing that at some point if this process continues to elongate, because we need civil rights protection. That's why we voted this council majority in.
That's not violating the agenda, Robert.
Good. And I thank you for your patience, Catherine.
Thank you.
And Chris.
Can I make a contribution?
You know what? Let's go with public comment of 4 to 5. Just so you all know, that means we're not going to be discussing.